Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer. This is episode number 252. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, specifically Train Heroic, for bringing this to you for free. I'm only partnered with brands that I believe in, and Train Heroic is one of those companies that I think is doing it the right way. They're giving back to the coaching community, but they're also providing a great resource and taking things to the next level. This week, I'm joined by a friend of mine, Andy McCloy. He's the owner of Body Trace Institute down in Alabama, BCI. We've got a chance to hang out through the years at a variety of conferences, and it's just extremely respected in the strength and conditioning community, and the business that he's built and the impact that he's making in his community is second to none. I appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Thanks, man. I mean, I consider this an honor. This is one of those podcasts I've wanted to make my way onto. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, hey, let's get into you got a little bit of an orthodox kind of way into this profession.
Yeah.
You just kind of pieced it together. Talk a little bit, Reader's Digest, how you got into the profession. And maybe what period of time, because you've pretty much been a business owner almost all the time.
Yeah.
What period of time would best define you now? Like, where did you really grow into your own as the person you are today?
Yeah. You kind of want me to go into some of the background, like how I got into it and then roll into that. It starts way back, right? So at 16 years old, I was already heavily addicted to the iron. Like, it was my life. It was all I did. Fortunately, I had a friend of mine whose dad trained at Chalet's Powerhouse in Marlow Heights, Maryland, owned by Mark Chalet. So I got exposed to a lot of high-level power lifters at a very early age. At 16 years old, I became a father. 17 years old, 18 years old, I ended up on my own. And I got a job as a trainer. I met a guy that actually had a similar background as me. He paid for my first personal training certification, hired me, and brought me on. And this was like around when functional training was kind of like breaking into the scene, the old Gary Gray days. And so I had this powerlifting background and I started appreciating this movement-based approach. But I was a knucklehead when I was young. And quite frankly, I'd be dead or in prison if I stayed where I grew up. So having a young daughter, living in the projects, dealing with a lot of the elements that I was dealing with, I decided we needed to get up out of there. And my family had relocated to Alabama. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. And so I moved out here to Alabama and just kind of arrogantly started a business right away. I walked into a Gold's Gym, said, hey, look, I'm a trainer. Here's my certification. I want to train people. Within about a year, kind of took over that whole gym, got an exclusivity contract where I hired and staffed all the trainers, replicated that at another gym. And I did that from like 2000 to 2005. During that time, I started training athletes from the local schools because I had other coaches working with the general fitness population. And I just, because of my sport background and my unique background of screwing up, I wanted to at least help young men and women avoid a lot of the hangups. And I felt that going all in on the sport performance side of things was the best way to do that. So about 2005, went all the way in there, kind of pushed all my chips in. And, that was the turning point in my life. And I started stumbling on to people that I deeply respect and have developed relationships with now, like Coach Joe Ken, and essentially just learned vicariously through them. What you notice is my experience is void of any college or any direct internships or mentorships. I just knew I loved this stuff, and I figured out who the guys were that were the best at it, and just committed myself to, learning from them and digesting everything that I could.
Yeah, I think that's so important for people to hear, because, I mean, it's right now young coaches that listen to the show, or even old coaches, I mean, we think that we can fix everything by throwing a credential behind your name or some sort of distinction behind your name. But the reality is just go find, who are the experts? What I always like to say is, who are the originators? So yeah. Joe Kidd was the originator of the tier system. So seek him out and learn it from the guy that originated it. And where was his motivations? And then start backtracking from there, you know. And I think, I mean, doesn't matter where you start, you know, what, how many degrees, whatever. I mean, it's on the job training. You gotta get in the trenches, and you've been doing that since 16 years old. So that's cool to hear. You don't do that, you know. You don't start a business essentially at 18 years old. I mean, a personal trainer, your own business.
Yep.
You don't just start a business that young without making a ton of mistakes. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made as a business owner?
One is, for me, in my specific situation, like, I wasn't working for a university or a team. It was prioritizing only studying training knowledge as opposed to business, sales, marketing, fulfillment, and those type of things. Like, that was a major mistake of mine early on. I thought, and I would still hang my hat on our competence and our coaching ability, and I think that's our biggest differentiator. But I think if you can butt that up against really solid business knowledge, sales and marketing that is integrity-based, that's the way to go. The second thing would be, you know, I started out kind of in the general fitness world where there was this like entrepreneurial mindset that people appreciated. But when I moved into strength and conditioning, what I realized is kind of the old guard or some people, they didn't appreciate that. They kind of talked down on guys who were a little more entrepreneurial. And so I kind of switched and I guess it started celebrating the struggle. It was like, you know, and it seems like we do that a lot in our industry, and the celebrating the struggle of being underpaid and overworked. And I just never understood that, even though I kind of adopted that belief system because it was so prevalent amongst the people that I was circulating with at that time. So I would say those are probably the two biggest mistakes that I made. And, you know, just thinking I was a little bit smarter than what I really was would probably be another one. You know, not really, my identity was attached to trying to impress people as opposed to just being competent.
I could agree with you more. I think we all make that mistake of thinking that we're smarter than we are, for sure. But, you know, finding the way to learn how to brand yourself in that integrity-based way is so, so important. Because you're, whether or not you think that you're in sales or not, you are as a strength and conditioning coach. You know, even if you're at a school where you don't have to sell a membership or a training session or whatever, you're still selling yourself to your athletes every single day, or you're selling yourself to your administration or your coaches every single day. And those are things that the sooner you become better at that, the sooner you're going to rise to whatever that next level is for you, for sure. But I couldn't agree anymore. You know, you work pretty much primarily on the private sector, but I mean, you work with elite level athletes coming from, you know, high school program, I'm sure you have some sort of program. You got guys like Jordan Matthews and guys like that have coming back from college programs and pro programs. You know, how do you integrate, you know, your training with what other people are doing, you know? And not, you know, and using that integrity-based approach where you're not bashing. And that's one of the things that I respect the most about you is, I mean, you're a very knowledgeable coach and trainer, and but I've never heard you say a bad word about anybody. You know, I've never seen you say, you know, this is the right way and you're doing it the wrong way. How have you gone about that, navigated that, and then finding ways to integrate the training?
One, I mean, I think just not bashing people comes back to, like, we all have different environments and we work in different worlds, and who am I to judge what somebody else is doing without having that level of insight into not only what's going on in their business world, but what's going on in their personal life too. But in regards to how we blend these things together, when it comes to high school athletes, I think this is the biggest conundrum, right? It's the biggest problem that exists, because most high school and middle school athletes in the state of Alabama are training at school. And the way I see it is, you have ideal situations and you have non-ideal situations. And a great example is, when Angelo James, who works for Play, came here to work at Madison Academy, I met him at Coach Joe Ken's house. I really liked Angelo, really appreciated him, and he was looking for a job in that world. And I just helped connect him with somebody, and you know, he showed and proved that he more than deserved that job. And that selfishly created an ideal situation. I had a guy in my community now that I trusted, who I spoke the same language with, and we could create a program that worked together concurrently. So I think, number one, having the communication skills and the courage to reach out and evaluate the other coaches in your market and then kind of bucket them into two categories. Are they able to provide you with enough information on what they do to where you can then be the supplement and work around that, right? I think that's step one. And if we look back 10, 15 years ago, I'm not so sure this is the way that most people were approaching it. If you look, everybody was doing max effort exercises with their kids all the time. Everything had to be highlight worthy on the internet. And I remember I did the same thing. I remember putting bands on kids and they were shaking and shivering and, you know, but I was just kind of following the leader and not asking myself, well, wait a minute, if they're already maxing at school or they have a high intensity day or a heavy day, why the heck am I doing the same thing? Even if I'm choosing a different exercise or calling it a special exercise, it just didn't make sense. Then the non-ideal situation is much harder to work around because you might have kids doing something that kind of looks like what I'd call bad CrossFit. You might have kids doing a powerlifting only program, and it can really vary. So I think you need a template, you need a daily readiness assessment, and you need to be able to communicate with your athletes effectively about what they did. And then you might have to use a house term, go OTS and go off your script for the day, and modify that program based on what they did. I think your loading has to be incredibly light or, you know, low intensity. I think the volume has to be low to moderate, because you just have so many other variables you have absolutely no control over. And I think your biggest money is improving the way people move. And I know that's a very unsexy thing to say in the strength and conditioning world, but I debate this with anybody who actually works in an environment like this, is that you show me how you can squeeze more strength out of them when you have no control out of everything else that they're doing. You know, and I'm open to that, right? But I know that we've been able to improve movement variability, conditioning, and create improve biomotor abilities that also support everything else that we're trying to develop.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree. Talk a little bit about that readiness assessment. I mean, you know, you're not obviously in a gym setting. I mean, you got kids coming from all these different environments. You got a group probably starting on the hour every hour. You know, how do you quickly assess the whole group?
Yeah, so I was looking. I thought I might have one of our workout cards in here. I would just show it to you. But as each group gets together, the coach brings them all together, says, all right, guys, you got 2 minutes to self-evaluate. At the top of their workout card, how motivated are you to train today? How fatigued are you to train today? Have you had a pre-workout meal today? How many hours did you sleep last night? How would you rate the quality of that sleep last night? And then how intense was your last workout? And when we say your last workout, we mean the one you did at school. And we have them rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 5, one being the worst, 5 being the best. We always say if you have any more than 2 threes or 2 twos, we're going off the script and we're going to modify things for the day. A lot of times that looks like some type of aerobic recovery circuit. I can just define it as that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. So, I mean, it's just a 2-minute affair at the beginning. And then at that point, anybody that's got more than 2 threes will see you separately or the coach separately and say, okay, how do you want me to modify this basically?
That's exactly what we do. I mean, I'm not that smart to make it any more complex. You know, like we've tried to do heart rate variability with our NFL guys, we do, but right. In that group, and when you've got 12 kids in a group, and that's kind of our model, 8 to 12 kids at a clip, man, it's just really difficult to expect everybody to be on HRV and then to make database decisions in real time, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. And I mean, that age group isn't always going to do it the right way either. They're not going to be laying down calm for
compliance, right? Compliance.
You know, in your gym, you train everything from the elementary kid to the pro athlete, to the elite athlete. I mean, some people will say, you know, training elementary age kids is maybe not ideal or shouldn't be done. You know, how have you kind of gone about starting that long-term athletic development model, for lack of a better word, early and then progressing through maybe the time, you know, they go through high school and off to college, that you've created a movement literacy that's probably pretty strong at that point?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think we got a real issue with kids these days. Like when we were growing up, like we played multiple sports, we played together outside, right. And kids don't get that. And even though I knew that when we first started our program, which we call development and fundamentals with an emphasis on the word fun, we still tried to train these kids like we train middle school and high school kids. You know, we're having to do arm action drills and, you know, posture holds. And these kids have the attention span of about 3 minutes. And so it would go good for about 3 minutes at a clip. And then it would get ugly again. So there's two people that have really influenced me on this, despite all the books and literature I've read. But Jeremy Fritch and Anthony Donskoff both have really been a big help in that area for me. And I, more indirectly than directly, I just value both of their knowledge bases. And I kind of steal every book that they recommend and follow a lot of their recommendations. Anthony helped a lot with our middle school age template. Just it was a free PDF, I think he put out. And after I read it, I was like, man, just makes too much sense. We've got to simplify this template. And then Jeremy, in my opinion, I'm not sure anybody's doing what Jeremy's doing with kids kind of in the 7 to 11-year-old age. And we borrowed a lot from him. We played tons of games with that age group, you know, from tag games to relay games. We built obstacle courses. I mean, it's really void of what you would call strength and conditioning. And right. It's probably what physical education is supposed to look like in the school system. You know, like I know I crab walked and climbed ropes and did monkey bars. And like we did that when I was in school. Kids aren't doing that now. And fortunately, the coach that I've hired who runs and mans that program, he's also an elementary school teacher. So he has a wide range of games and things that he brings to the table. And his name's Kelly Fields. He does a phenomenal job for us.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think it's so – I mean, it's obviously missing and lacking throughout. And, you know, when you throw them into a strength conditioning gym, it doesn't – you said you don't need to be loading the spine. You don't need to be doing a lot of those things. But you need to be teaching them tumbling and how to fall and how to, you know, how to hold positions isometrically and
yes.
Those types of land, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and we do sprinkle in some block zero stuff. Like, you know, we teach them athletic position and ISO holds, and that is a component of what we would call our ramp. But once we get to the good stuff, it's all fun and games. And usually we start with a game, we end with a game, we kind of sandwich it, and then we'll work on skill development by way of, like, obstacle courses and races in between.
Yeah, no, I like it. Well, you've been able, you know, coming from kind of an unorthodox, you know, start, you know, and just kind of, you know, piecemealing it together throughout your career, you've got a network that you can rely, that you mentioned Joe Kinn, Mike Robertson, you know, guys like that, that, you know, and you know, I just wouldn't normally reach out to a personal trainer or a one-off business owner, but you've been able to be a guy that's developed friendships. A network that you can reach out to at a moment's notice to ask a really targeted question. You know, how did you go about building that network, and what advice would you have to that young, you know, coach that was similar to yourself?
So that's a great, great question. And I would say if I have one asset, it's my network. Like I know who I can call to get the answers that I need. And I think it started with a very just altruistic, like, I respect these guys and I want them to know it, you know? So I would just reach out to them and just say, hey, thank you. You know, thank you for the book. Thank you for the program. Thank you for this article that you wrote. It really helped me. The second thing is, and this might, I don't know if people appreciate this strategy or not, but I believe in supporting the people I believe in. So, I've probably been on House's website for 10 years or whenever he started having a paid website, I bet you he's charged me every year, you know, I will continue to give him that money for the rest of my life or as long as he has that. Same thing with Mike Robertson, anything he puts out, I buy, you know, and a host of other guys, Brett Bartholomew, like any of these guys that I respect, who I have friendships with, I invest in them because I want them to know that, like, I'm not here to take from you. I'm here to give and receive. Right. The other thing is being ruthlessly dedicated to continuing education. What I knew is that if I show up at every seminar, like every one, and I do it every year, if I just do that long enough, I'm going to acquire some real knowledge, and I'm also going to build some really serious relationships. Because as you know, most of the best networking is done after the event, over a beer or a meal, and you get to know people in those environments. And I've gotten to know some really sharp guys in our industry just through those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I mean, the the give is so important in the networking aspect is to, and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be financially or fiscally. It could be, you said, I mean, a true thank you, you know, putting a book out, I've done it, you know, putting out a podcast, I've done it. Those are things that just don't happen. I mean, it takes time, it takes energy. And for people to truly appreciate that, that goes a long way in my book and other people's books as well. And so I agree with that 100%. You talk a little bit about that continued education and interacting with people, being ruthlessly dedicated to it. What have you found to be the best source, you know, of continued education? I mean, we talked briefly off camera about how you don't, you know, you really don't go to the internet much anymore.
Yeah.
You mentioned how important conferences have been to you, but what's been the best?
So it's probably in different stages of my development. I would say early on it was books. And I mean, basically it was like anything that back when like Jim Windler worked at Elite FTS and like he would answer the phone, like I would just call up like, what book should I buy? Or, you know, I would just take information from Dave Tate that he posted on the website. Like any book that somebody recommended, I would buy it. Like, I think, I mean, I probably have 200 books I haven't read sitting in my house because Dave gave the advice to stockpile books probably 12 years ago. But the ones that I did read were instrumental in my growth. So I would say books at one point in time. I would say right now, probably podcasts are my favorite way of getting education because of the simplicity of it. You know, I just throw some headphones in my ear when I wake up, start my education that way. I listen to them in my car everywhere I go. You know, so it's just podcasts have probably become the next big thing. And then once you have a level of background knowledge and understanding of principles, then it becomes down to the environment that you work in. So then finding practitioners that work in the environment that you want to be in, reaching out to them and asking them more specific or drill down questions to get a better understanding of how what you've learned, how it may or may not apply, you know, to the world that you're going to be in.
Yeah. That last one I think is the critical element to me is not being afraid to reach out to people and have a conversation. And that starts with having intelligent questions. So reading material they put out and finding things, you know, really researching the person. But if you call any influencer, Joe Ken, you know, anybody with a targeted, intelligent question, they're going to give you an answer, you know, because they've all had people that have poured into them and they recognize the importance of it. Now, if you call and say, how do I get my bench press up? It's going to take a hike, you know, and I get those questions too. So
yeah,
we talked a little bit, you know, in the past and about just the strength of the industry field in general and the positives and the negatives of the field. What are some of the things that you think are being done well? And what are some of the things that you think that just kind of makes you kind of shake your head a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, if I start like kind of the things that shake my head or make me shake my head are like the celebrating the struggle thing. The guys are, you know, just kind of celebrating the struggle and they're not trying to create other opportunities for themselves that could maybe free them up some more time for their family. Which to me is, you know, the most important thing. And then I think we have this weird thing and listen, I know I've been guilty of this myself. So I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but I feel like a lot of the times we try to impress other coaches more than anyone else. You know, we talk about the human organism and, you know, if you talk that way to your clients, you're losing them. And I think that we need to be more concerned with how we impress our clients and our athletes than what other coaches think about us. And I'm telling you, this is a very hard thing for me to overcome. My identity, I think, was wrapped up in how other coaches viewed me for a long time when I was young. And I had to shake that. And, you know, the mentors in my life, like Coach Ken, they've helped me through that directly and indirectly, just through conversation. Just my path has been different, and I shouldn't expect my walk to look like anyone else's. So just stay true to who I am and do what I do best and my unique ability, and then, you know, surround myself and hire people to shadow and hide my weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, the old adage of genius isn't taking the complex and making it complex. Genius is taking complex and making it simple and making it so your athletes understand it. And embrace it and buy into it is that's who your true client is. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're working for a university or a pro team or whatever, the true end user is the athlete, and you have to be able to connect to them. And I know you've done that for many, many years. We end the show here with a few resources. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
The best piece of coaching advice? Oh, this just popped right in my head, and it's easy because of Jordan Matthews, wide receiver for the Patriots. Like, I started working with Jordan when he was in sixth grade, and I dog cussed him every day, told him how much of a lazy bum he was. I mean, and he was, and I think he would admit that, right? But I thought that was motivating people.
Right.
And it wasn't. And you know, he would hide from me and run from me, you know, but I remember it was probably his ninth or 10th grade year. I remember hearing the quote, "Nobody cares what you know until they know how much you care." Right. And that quote alone, and my relationship with Jordan changed my coaching philosophy for forever. And now I lead with my heart. You know, I lead with empathy. I'm in constant communication with my athletes. I mean, I was just in Jordan's wedding. I mean, it's now, you know, I put my coach hat on when I need to, but he's more of a friend, you know, at this stage of life than anything. And I credit him a lot with kind of softening me and teaching me how to be a coach, not just replicating the behavior that I saw from the guys that coached me when I was younger.
Yeah, no, that's great. I wish you wouldn't have coached him so well when he was at Vanderbilt.
He did pretty good there. He did.
Good there. Coach. What's a book, app, and website recommendation?
So website wise, like I'm very partial to Elite FTS. I think those guys are great. You know, I think Onnit is a great company that's providing a lot of good stuff. But like I said, I don't get on the internet much anymore and search websites. But like the old Charlie Francis board was very influential in my life. I mean, I still get birthday wishes from that website. That's what's funny. They still send you those. The old T Nation website was amazing. And not to say it's bad now. It was very instrumental when I was younger in my development. So those would probably be my websites. From an app standpoint, there's an app I use every day called Insight Timer. I'm a big believer in meditation and creating space. We live in such a high-intensity world that I think we need to create space at times. Yeah. And Insight Timer is really cool. Probably my favorite meditation app. And then from a book standpoint, the two that come to mind, I think, are the 48 Laws of Power. I think reading that book allows you to see the games that people consciously and subconsciously try to run on you. And if you have good values and character, you can use that book for good, not so much the Machiavellian nature that it seems to be written in. Right. And then the second book is Why Motivating People Doesn't Work and What Does. And it really just talks about the self-determination theory, what I believe is called the self-determination theory, or the ARC model, you know, autonomy, relatedness, and competence, and gives you some strategies on how to utilize that.
Oh, that's fantastic, man. Well, like I said at the very beginning, I mean, you are a guy that you know, wears your heart on your sleeve. You pour into people, not just, you know, other coaches and you know, whether or not they give to you or not, you pour into people. You're completely – what you've done in your community, where the philanthropic type of opportunities that you've done there and made an impact and don't seem to be afraid to go into any kind of environment and go dig out some of those kids that maybe need that influence, and but also turn around and not, you know, but hold the Silver Spoon kids to a higher standard as well sometimes too. It's awesome. So
yeah, going right.
You're completely respected by myself and so many, and appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
Man, thanks a lot, Ryan. It means a lot. Seriously, coming from you, and it means a lot. Sincerely.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.